Parsha Vayera begins with the outstanding act of kindness, Achnasas Orchim, on the part of Avram Avinu. He's old and he's in pain and it's boiling hot. Nonetheless, as soon as he sees the guests, he rushes towards them and he accords them honor also. He doesn't just show them into the kitchen with the hired help. He gives them accolades. He calls them my masters. Sometimes it's much easier to give a person things than to give them a respectful word. And Avram does all of this and more. And as we know, these guests were actually three malachim, and each one came with a task. And one of them was to tell Sarah that she would have a child in a year's time. And that is recorded in Pasuk Yud. Of Perik Yudches. Vayomer, so this Malach says, Shova Shuve Lecha Ko'es Chaya. I will return. Vihine Vein Sarah Ishtecha, and Sarah will have a child. Sarah hears this. Vesarah Shamas Pesach Ohel. And she doesn't believe it. And she laughs. Pasuk Yud Aleph gives us a bit of background, beholzot to understand. But Avram and Sarah zekenim, but by yomim they're old. Doesn't seem to be on the cards, as they say. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vatitzchak Sarah bikirba limor. She laughed inside of her, saying, "Acharei velosi hoiseli edna. After I've been withered, shall I then become young?" Vaduniz Okain, my husband's old. And she's upbraided for laughing. A bit of perspective. After all, we're all good Jews. We read the Chumash. We wouldn't have laughed. Here's Sarah. She hears that she's going to have a child. And she laughs. Doesn't seem lefi erka. Doesn't seem to be appropriate. Ramban gives us just a drop of context. Who does she hear these words from? So we know, of course, because we have the insight, we have the background information. These are malachim, we even know their names. It's Michael who's coming to. Avram, the only people that don't know that these are malachim are Avram and Sarah. I mean, that's clear. And even to the end, they don't know that they're malachim. Avram and Sarah did not read Parshas Vayera. So as far as they're concerned, these are normal people, and that's actually the best case scenario. It's possible that they're abnormal people. They're wandering nomads. And what's more, as Rashi's already told us, and the Pasuk says, it's kechom hayom, it's incredibly hot. It was unnaturally hot so that no normal person would venture outside. So who would venture outside? Either if you're heatproof because you're a malach, or if you're a human being, it's because you're abnormal. These are the guests that Avram and Sarah are treating. So if we put ourselves in the scene, these three half-baked travelers have turned up, they've enjoyed the hospitality, and before they go, one of them gives Sarah a bracha that next year she'll have a child. That's the context. This isn't Hashem talking as far as she knows. It's some person whose lucidity is highly questionable. So to hear a brocha like that from a person like that, well, as they say in Yiddish, don't call us, we'll call you. How seriously is she meant to take a brocha? So she laughs it off. That's just to get a bit of understanding of Sarah's position. But what's interesting is, at the end of the day, she is rebuked for laughing. But the moral of the story is that this is about the madriga of Sarah. Because the moral of the story is, even to hear a bracha from someone like that, she shouldn't have laughed. Because you never know. Anything is possible. But this is the level of moral rectitude that Sarah is being held to. Okay, so it is. Now, what's interesting is to raise the question in Parshanut. The pasuk says she laughed. Did she laugh out loud? The pasuk gives us words that she said. After I've been withered, will I be young? My husband's old. Did she say this? Did she say this to someone? And here we find Rishonim are divided. On the one hand, there's a bit of tension here because it says Bikirba, which sounds like it's inside of her, but it does say Lemor, which sounds like she said it. Well, the Radak and the Ibn Ezra, Derech HaPshat, explain that this is an internal laugh. I mean, she laughed within herself, as it says, Bikirba. Aye, the Pasuk says, Lemor, sounds like she said something. Lemor means the Pasuk is giving voice to what she thought. This is the content of her laugh. But Lemor doesn't mean verbally. She didn't express this to anyone. However, we should know others, other Rishonim, the Rokeach, Rabbi Elazar Rokeach of the Hasidic Ashkenaz, one of the Rishonim, he understands that Lemor is definitive. In other words, Lemor means she said it. She said it to people around her, although the others in the tent. Even though it says Bikir Ba, that means that they kind of kept it within themselves. It wasn't like a public laughter. She didn't laugh at him in his face. But she did laugh, and she said this. Now, interestingly, there are repercussions, or implications more correctly, from this question with regard to what follows. As if to say, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, it says, Vayomer Hashem el Abraham, Lama zet zachakar Sara lemo. So Hashem says to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh? Now, here too we should know, and we're still just in Parshanut, there is a question as to who it was that said this to Avram. On the one hand, the pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem el Avraham. Sounds like Hashem himself said this to Avram. But there are those who say, and it's in line with the Rokeach, that this is still the Malach. It's possible for the pasuk to say, Vayomer Hashem, but it's still referring to the Malach because the Malach is representing Hashem. Ashem Sholcho. That we find. That even if a person happens to receive a message through the medium of a malach, but the pasuk will phrase it as Vayomer Hashem, because Hashem gave him the message through the malach. And in fact, what would seem to corroborate this understanding, even though it seems maybe not intuitive after all, Vayomer Hashem sounds like Hashem himself directly speaking. But have a look at the next pasuk, because this is still the same speaker. Hayipale me Hashem davar, is anything too much for Hashem? Now, who's talking? If Pasuk Yud Gimel Vayomer Hashem is Hashem himself talking, then when he goes on to discuss whether anything is too much for Hashem, he should have said Hayipale mimeni davar, because it's him talking. This seems to support the understanding that it's yet the Malach, and of course the Malach will talk of Hashem in the third person. He will say Hayipale mi Hashem davar. So that's one approach. But of course, there is another approach, and it's found in the Medrash Brachos Rabbah, that Vayomer Hashem is Hashem himself. And it's very interesting just to stay alert as the psukim unfold. Because when Hashem speaks to Avram, it must have been something of a surprise for Avram, so to speak, to hear from Hashem here. Because as far as he's concerned, so far he's been having a conversation just with these Arabs. So one of the guests says, there'll be, Sarah will have a child, Sarah laughs, Avram doesn't hear Sarah laughing, whether she laughed in the tent or whether she just laughed inside, he doesn't hear. So the last thing Avram heard is this bracha, and then before he knows it, Hashem himself is intervening, so to speak, and saying to Avram, why did Sarah laugh? That's the first thing Avram knows that Hashem is involved in the situation, and this, the first thing he hears that Sarah laughed. It's all very, very sudden. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to, so to speak, intervene? After all, the message has been given through a malach. If there's business that needs to be attended to, why did Sarah laugh? Whatever that needs to be said, let the malach say that as well. Why does Hashem need to take over, so to speak? But the Mefarshim explain that if we understand that Sarah laughed inside, so then the malach doesn't know what Sarah is thinking. A malach has a message, he has information that Hashem gives to tell Sarah. If Sarah has a thought, the malach doesn't know what Sarah is thinking. The Pasuk states in Tehillim, Hashem yodea machshavos adam. Hashem knows a person's thoughts. A malach can do a lot of things. It doesn't know what a person is thinking, says the Medrash. And therefore, this was something that was beyond the skill set of a malach to intervene. He can't respond to this. He doesn't know that anything's happened. But and therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bechvodo v'atmo, has to come in and deal with the fact that Sarah thought a laugh. Because Avram didn't know about it, and neither did the malach. And in a sense, therefore, if we just put all of what we've said in front of us, we see a certain correspondence, as if to say, there exists a question as to whether Sarah's laugh was internal or she expressed it. That's a machlokus rishonim. There's also a question as to who was it that told Avram about this? Why did Sarah laugh? Was it Diet the Malach or was it Hashem? We see that these two questions essentially line up, one opposite the other. If we understand that she laughed inside, so then a malach doesn't know that, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself needs to talk to Avram. If we understand that she laughed, maybe Avram couldn't hear her, but a malach can hear her, and therefore it's yet the malach talking, Hashem doesn't need to get involved. So that's in terms of Sarah's laugh. And let us see the rebuke. There's a famous statement of Chazal about this. Vayomer Hashem back in Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Hashem el Avraham. Lama zetzach akrasar alemor. Why did Sarah laugh? To say, ha'afum na meleid vani zakanti. Could I have a child? I'm too old. Now we know, because we've seen the Pasuk, that Sarah didn't say vani zakanti. She said, v'aduni zaken. My husband's old. But when Hashem played back her words to Avram, he didn't say that. He said that she said that she was old. What to make of this? Well, the Gemara talks about this in Maseches Yevamos in Daf Samechei and draws from this an amazing principle. Namely, sometimes to avoid ill will, right, mipnei hashalom, for the sake of peace, mutter l'shanes mipnei hashalom. It's mutter to change the facts for the sake of peace. And the Gemara says, Godol HaShalom, Shafilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shina Mipnei HaShalom. Even Hashem changed for the sake of Shalom. If we were sticking to the truth, then as he, from what Sarah said, it would go through the unpleasantness of quoting her as saying that Avram's old and that's not so nice. And therefore, he changed it from Vaduni Zaken to Vani Zakanti. And what the Gemara is saying is, if it's good enough for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's good enough for you, if conditions deserve it. And really, there are many chidushim. I believe this Rashi is well. Gemara is well known. Yes, Rashi even quotes it. Shin hakosav mipnei hashalom. The pasuk changed for the sake of peace. So the first chidush is this idea itself that you can change the truth for the sake of peace. We understand is a high priority. Of course, maybe it wouldn't stand in the face of pikuach nefesh. But this is not pikuach nefesh. For the sake of peace. But how sensitive or how at risk was the peace here? Also important to consider. It seems to be a rather mild issue. Firstly, what did Sarah say at the end of the day? She said, my husband's old. Well, you know, if you're 100 years old and someone says you're old, that's not they're not degrading you. I mean, it's a statement of fact. So it's not an insult. That's just how it is. People that are 100 years old like to be 100 years old. So, what did she say already? Moreover, what are we looking to prevent here? A difficult situation. How difficult would it have been? As if to say, and let's say the worst comes to worst, and Hashem tells Avram that Sarah thought for a moment that you're old. How long will it take Avram to recover? How long will it take their shalom bias to get back on an even keel? I would say momentarily. Yeah, I would call this a micro ruffle within the shalom bias. And with all this, Hashem changed, which tells us a lot about peace, tells us a lot about shalom bias, and that's the lesson that we learn from here. Interestingly, it's a parenthetical comment because I just mentioned it to reference it. One of the fascinating points about this juncture of the story is, why is Hashem asking Avram why Sarah laughed? Why doesn't he ask Sarah directly why she laughed? Which would not only be more direct, Hashem said to Sarah, why did you laugh? not only would it be more direct, and why involve Avram, but on the contrary, involving Avram now necessitates having to change so that Avram shouldn't hear that Sarah said that he was old. If Hashem spoke to Sarah direct, she knows what she said. There's no mipnei hashalom. He could have said to Sarah, why did you say that Avram was old? Or why did you laugh? Or whatever. So that's really interesting, because diverting or addressing Avram required now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, had to change. Why does this rebuke come through Avram? Why get Avram involved? And then you'll have to change? It's what they call in Hilchah Shabbos a melocha she'ena tzricha legufa. I mean, you have to do something, but if you hadn't spoken to Avram, you wouldn't have had to change in the first place. Apparently Avram needs to know about it. Okay. What's fascinating is, and as far as I know, as much as it's a well-known concept, mutter l'shanos b'pnei hashalom, there isn't a great deal written about it in terms of quantifying it or defining it. But we do find that the Ramban does qualify it. And he says something very interesting. What do we see from this Gemara? That you can change the truth for the sake of peace. Says Ramban, if this is your source, you can only change in the nature that you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed. Well, how did he change? She said that Avram is old, and he said that she said she was old. Well, did she say she was old? Yes. Because if you go back to Pasuk Yudbeis, she actually says two things in her laugh. But it's Chaksara b'kirba lemor. She said, number one, acharei velosi hoiseli ednar, but after I've withered, I'll be young again. Which, to put in simpler terminology, means I'm old. And Vaduni Zaken, he's old. Which means, says Ramban, if you take her full words, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuked her through Avram, for why did she say she's old? He changed, not in the sense that he said that she said something she never said. She did say it. It's called a change because he didn't say everything that she said. He omitted half of her words. She said, essentially, I'm old and Avram's old. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the rebuke, missed out her saying Avram's old. But the change never took the form of putting words into her mouth that she never said. And if this is our source, Veshinu Mipnei HaShalom, that's a major qualification, because it sounds like the license to change for the sake of peace means less than full disclosure. You don't have to say everything. But to say something that wasn't said, that we haven't seen, that's a major statement of Ramban. What's fascinating is, however, it's not so clear that with her opening words, she meant to say that she was old. After all, there is a tradition in the Medrash, and it's quoted by Rashi later on, that Sarah, on that occasion, actually did become young again. Her childbearing cycle returned. It relates to the bread, and then they didn't bring the bread, and etc. and so forth, because she'd gone back. Now, if that's true, that Sarah, in a sense, youth had returned to her, so you've got to come back to these words when she laughs and she says, "Acharei velosi hoiseli edna," after I'm withered, will I become young? You have become young, according to this approach. So what does she mean by those words? Says the Mizrahi, according to this approach, which Rashi has adopted, that she indeed returned to her youth, then there's a difference in the nature of her first statement to the second statement. The first statement is not a statement of incredulity, it's a statement of fact. And maybe that explains why she says it in such a, I guess, a flowery way. She doesn't just say straight to the point. She laughed and said, I'm old and my husband's old. She didn't say it in that linear way. She said, after I've withered, I'll become. That's a statement of fact, because she did. So that's a positive statement. Acharei velosi hoiseli edna, as if to say, well, she looks at Avram, I've become young. The problem is, I mean, Avram is still old. Baduni Zaken. Now, a corollary of that understanding is that if her words, Acharei velosi hoiseli edna, are a positive statement, then she never said that she was old. She said she's young, but Avram's old. If that's true, then for Hashem to say that she said she was old is actually changing her words, which gives for broader license in what we mean when we say you can change the truth for the sake of peace. So and this says the Mizrahi. So it's fascinating to consider that what seems to be a question of pure parshanut, it couldn't get more rarefied in the parsha. What happened with Sarah? Was she young again? Was she not young again? it filters into an understanding of her words and then has halachic implications for what you can learn from this case of changing for the sake of peace. Again, just to summarize, if indeed she became young again, then her statement, after I withered, I'll be young, means I am young. Avram is old means I'm young and he's old. Hashem said that she is old. She never said that, but he changed for the sake of peace. Whereas if we understand that she said that both of us are old, then when Hashem quoted her, it's a selective quotation, but he never said anything that she didn't say. So that's the machlokas that revolves around those psukim and what we can learn from them in terms of mutar lishanes b'pnei hashal. Now, when all is said and done, and it's actually very difficult, or it should be difficult, because after she is rebuked through Avram, Pasuk Tetzvav says, Vatichachesh Sarah, Lemor. Vatichachesh, she denied it, Lemor. Lo tzachakti, she said, I didn't laugh. Ki yareya, because she was afraid. Vayomer lo ki tzachakt. Hashem says, no, you laughed. It's a very difficult pasuk. It should make us uncomfortable to hear that pasuk. I mean, you've had a mishaberach between Cohen and Levi to simmer until it happens. Because, firstly, the question on Sarah, how could she deny it? I mean, whoever's involved, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is speaking, what's the point of denying it? And even if it's a malach, clearly someone knows something. Why would she deny it? And moreover, this is a separate question. The first question is about Sarah. The second question is about the Torah. Why would the Torah tell us that she denied it? That's unpleasant. And it just gets more unpleasant because she says, I didn't laugh. And then what's the last word here? Vayomer lo, ki tzachakt, you did laugh. Don't try and deny it. You did laugh. It's very uncomfortable. And what are we to learn from this? Now, we have been operating on the assumption that this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking according to the Medrash because no one else knows. After all, she laughed inside. That's things that she's thinking. Hashem yodea machshavos adam. Right? The Malach doesn't know. But interesting to note that the question as to whether a Malach knows what a person's thinking is also a machlokas. It's an interesting machlokas. And it comes out through a comment of Tosfos. There's an interesting halacha in Maseches Shabbos in Daf Yud Beis. It's a halacha of Bikur Cholim. And it comes out because the Shechina is next to a Chole, and therefore there are certain restrictions about davening that are lifted because you're, in a sense, you're in the presence of the Shechina. And one of them is that the Gemara says, typically or generally, a person shouldn't daven in Aramaic. I think this is one of the easier halachas for us to keep spontaneously, but a person should not daven in Aramaic. Why? Says the Gemara, She'ein malachi asharis niskokim le'loshen aramis. The malachim, they don't relate to, or they don't accept. They don't get involved with a tefillah that's in Aramaic. And really what the Gemara is telling us, it's a major source for the idea that malachim are involved as conduits for tefillah. A malach comes from the word malacha, and the malacha is a job or a mission. And part of the mission of the malachim is to convey or transport the tefillahs of the Jewish people towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're part of that conduit. And this gives rise to many interesting questions. To what degree are they involved? And of course, there's always that danger area of actually addressing the malachim themselves, that it should only ever be as conduits. This is a discussion we had with regards to slichos, malachei rachamim, achnisa rachameinu, that it can never, chas v'chalila, be davening to the malach, but only addressing the malach as, and urging the malach as the conduit towards the tefillah. That's not true, that doesn't apply, says the Gemara, with regards to someone who's next to a chola, because the shechina is by a chola, and therefore the tefillah goes direct, you can daven in Aramaic. That's the good news. Now, what does it mean, this rather enigmatic phrase? Ein malach yasharis niskokim le'loshen arami. They don't relate to Aramaic. So the simple understanding is that they don't understand it. I mean, if one would dare to say something like that, they don't understand it. I must say, I've met many Talmidim over the years that in this respect are very angelic. They also don't understand it. So ain't the Malachim lo niskokin l'loshin arami. But it's difficult to say that, because at the end of the day, how hard can it be? I mean, they have unlimited time and resources. There was a time in our history where the Jewish people found it easier to speak Aramaic than they did Hebrew. In the times of the Mishnah, the Targum Unklus was said not to make life harder, to make life easier. They heard the Pasuk, they didn't get it. And then they heard Unklus and everything became clear. Because this was the lingua franca, was Aramaic. And the Malachim even then, no, they couldn't. They had this blank, this mental block about Aramaic. Can't be. Moreover, say the Tosfos, and this is the entry of the Tosfos in Shabbos there in Daf Yud Beis. It can't be that they don't understand Aramaic, says Tosfos, because they even know what a person is thinking. Now this is where Tosfos unleashes their position. As far as they're concerned, a Malach knows what a person is thinking. And interestingly, to consider what Tosfos mean by this, if they know what a person's thinking, they must know Aramaic. How does one lead to the other? Perhaps Tosfos means to say that maybe it's a kal v'chomer. If they're so smart, they know what you're thinking, then how can they not know Aramaic? Or maybe it means something else. Maybe it means that if they know what you're thinking, so then they don't need to understand the language of Aramaic, because they already have tapped into the thoughts that became your words. So even if they couldn't read and translate the words as they come out, but they know what you mean to say, because when you meant it, they knew it. It's an interesting question as to whether a person thinks in the language that they talk. Maybe thought is a universal language. And that pool of thought they've already tapped into. If you wish to format this into words of a foreign language, so be it. They already know what you're going to say. In any event, the position of the Tosfos is, of course, they know Aramaic, they know what you're thinking, they know what Aramaic is. The reason why they don't get involved in Aramaic, says Tosfos, which is also a Chiddush, is that they refuse on principle to get involved in Aramaic, because they feel that it's an affront to Lashon HaKodesh. Because Aramaic is based a lot on Lashon HaKodesh, it's like a sister language, and it's really out of respect for Lashon HaKodesh. You can daven in any other language. But don't daven in this language that like pretends to be equivalent to Lashon HaKodesh, which is amazing. We normally have quite a warm relationship with Aramaic. The whole of the Gemara is in Aramaic, and Targum Unklus is time-honored. But nonetheless, with regards to Tefillah, when the Malachim get involved, they are mekaneh. They are zealous on behalf of Lashon HaKodesh. Anything that looks like a pretender or an intruder, they boycott. It's amazing. In any event, for our purposes, we do see Tosfos on record, you know, for this very interesting machlokas. As far as they're concerned, from the Makoras, you see that a Malach knows what a person is thinking. This leaves us with two questions, essentially, generated from our above discussion. Number one, if a Malach knows what a person is thinking, the question returns, why did Hashem need to get involved when Sarah laughed? So far we've said, listen, if she said it verbally, then a Malach could hear it. If she thought it internally, then a Malach couldn't catch it, so Hashem needs to get involved. But if we say that a Malach knows what a person is thinking, then even if she only thought it, Hashem shouldn't need to get involved. The Malach should catch it and be able to continue the conversation. And secondly, what about the Pasuk? The Pasuk seen in Tehillim, it's the Shir Shayom for Wednesday, seems to contradict Tosfos. The Pasuk says, Hashem yodea machshavos adam. The implication seems to be that Hashem alone knows what a person is thinking. A Malach doesn't know. But Tosfos says a Malach does know. With regard to this Tosfos, that a Malach knows what a person is thinking, there's a fascinating crystallization of this idea which takes place in a sefer called Mishnas Chachomim by Maharam Chagiz, Rabbi Moshe Chagiz, one of the great Sephardi Gedolim. And he says, should you ask if a Malach knows what a person is thinking, and if Hashem knows what a person is thinking, so what's the difference between them? Is it the same level of knowledge? Says Maharam Chagiz, no. Even a thought goes through two stages. A thought begins, actually, there may be more than one way to describe it, but a thought almost begins as a feeling, in the sense that it's a tendency towards something. It can then formulate into a defined thought. But in the beginning, it's kind of this formless thought material, the thought hasn't been thought out. And sometimes you have that, as people are, they know they're thinking something, but they haven't yet worked out exactly what they think, but you give them a moment, they'll work it out. That thought is on the way from its more primal, formless state to a developed and finished state. Says Maran Chagiz. When Tosa says that a malach knows what a person is thinking, that's when the person knows what he's thinking. He's got to know what he's thinking first. If it's a finished thought, a complete thought, then he knows it, and at that point a malach knows also. But if the person himself doesn't even yet know what he's thinking, it's still on the way. It's baderech. It's a work in progress. Then a malach doesn't yet know. The person doesn't know. Only Hashem knows what a person is thinking at that stage, even before the person knows. It's there. It just hasn't been formulated as a thought. And what's fascinating is, says Maran Chagiz, that pshat in the pasuk. The pasuk states, Hashem yodea machshavos adam kihema hava. Now, that's the pasuk in Shir Shayom. We, I believe, normally translate, as the simple translation is straightforward, that Hashem knows a person's thoughts, ki heima havel. The key is, you know, that they are, right? In other words, that they are havel, hevel, worthless, transient, not worth that much. But Maran Chagiz says, according to Tosfos, you read the pasuk differently. Hevel can be something that's worthless. Koheles, gamze hevel. But hevel is also something that's formless. Havla, havli. It's not solidified. Every thought begins as hevel. Every thought begins as a kind of a formless tendency, which then develops into a thought. The word ki, says Maran Chagiz, here doesn't mean that they are. It means when they are. Like ki savo el ha'aretz. And therefore, what the pasuk is saying is, look, even malachim know what a person's thinking when the thought is developed. But Hashem yodea machshavos adam ki heima havel. Even when those thoughts are just hevel, they're just this kind of nebulous presence within the person that hasn't even become a thought. Fascinating. And with this in mind, let us come back to Sarah's laughter. Sarah laughed. She was incredulous. Can it really be? Where did she laugh? Well, the pasuk says, "Vatitzchak Sarah bikirba leimor." She laughed bikirba, inside of her. What does that mean? We understand it means that she thought it, but she didn't say it. But when people think things in the Torah, they are never referred to as saying this bikirba. They are always referred to it as saying it bilibam, in their heart. You find actually with Avram, there's much to contrast Avram's laughter with Sarah's laughter, but at least in this point, when Avram is told by Yitzchak, bilibo. Very similar to Sarah. The Mefarshim have to explain to us how they're different, but at least in this respect, that's standard. Bayomer bilibo, lahavdil, Esav, bayomer Esav bilibo, yikruvu yimei eva lavi. And also in Megillas Esther, bayomer Haman bilibo, the miyach botzalach, the seisikar yotemi many. That's in the heart. What's the difference between a thought that's bilibo and a thought that bekirbo? Says Reb Shimon Schwab in the Sefer Mayan Beis HaShoeva, it's the difference as to how developed the thought is. A thought bilibo is thought out, it's developed, and the person's actually actively thinking that. Bikirbo is in the innards. It's in the kishkas. It hasn't yet emerged as a defined thought. Uh-huh. So now we look at Sarah with new eyes. If we take the pasuk here, redactic in the word bikirba, that means actually the laughter that Sarah experienced wasn't a joke that she or a laughter that she thought of. It was a kind of a feeling that rippled through her that wasn't even defined. But the Torah defines it. Because that feeling, that kind of momentary pause or There are words that Torah gives to that. But Sarah herself had not given words to that. Even inside of herself, it was still Bekirba. It wasn't Biliba. Now, with this in mind, we look very differently. Because when Avram is rebuked that Sarah laughed, this was news. News for whom? Well, news for Avram and news for Sarah. She hadn't fully noted that she'd laughed. If you would have asked her, when you heard that news, did you laugh? She would have said no. But all of a sudden, she's receiving a message because it hadn't really developed. She's receiving a message through Avram saying, why did Sarah laugh? At that point, Sarah's saying, really? Did I laugh? She didn't think so. Moreover, not only didn't she think so, but this now became a kind of a self-defining moment. Because if you ever thought that passes through on that primal level, on that Bekirbo level, you will need to be able to access it in order to realize whether or not you thought it. And in order to do that, you will need peace of mind. You will need a certain focus or tranquility in order to tap into it, to make sure that you're able to define it, because it's such a transient thing. But someone who's had that type of Bekirbo thought, if you ask them, what were you thinking? But they're in an agitated state, they won't be able to tap into it. They won't have the focus. And lahavdil, but I think it's very helpful for us. Very often, when you're looking to work out what you think about something, you have a feeling, but you can't really put words to it. So you'll ask people around you, just be quiet, just give me a moment. I just need to, I'm thinking something, I don't know what it is. I have thoughts about this, let me just define it. And you need a kind of a bit of a moment of peace, and hopefully you'll get it, and then you can say what you're thinking or whatever. If you're not at peace during that time, so then you won't get it. And this now is a new understanding of what it means for Sarah to deny the fact that she laughed. And the pasuk says the reason why she denied it is because she was afraid. The simple understanding is she knew that she'd laugh, but she was afraid to admit it. It's very difficult to say that. Anyway, it's difficult, but this is super difficult. But Rav Shimon Schwab says, no, the words ki areya, because she was afraid, that is to say she was in a state of fear or agitation. She'd just been told that she'd laughed, and now she's on the spot a little bit, which made it impossible for her to recognize that feeling that she'd forgotten about, because it barely happened, was actually a laughter. She couldn't access it. That's why she denied it. So the words ki areya aren't her motive for consciously denying it. It's the reason why she was unable to become conscious of it. And thus she denied it. And therefore when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you laughed, this was news for Sarah, because she wasn't able to recognize it. So this is a very new way of understanding this whole episode. And I think it's really, if nothing else, aside from the diyukim in the parshanut, which are always of enormous value, it gives us a bit of insight into who we're talking about when we say Sarah Imenu. Not only, as we began a few moments ago, is she rebuked for laughing when this traveling nobody told her she was going to have a child. She was rebuked for even allowing such a notion to pass through her at a level that she wasn't even conscious of. Even just that half thought that can't be, which she hadn't even given words to on the Madriga of Sarah, that almost visceral reaction was also considered to be unacceptable. It's unacceptable if you're Sarah Imenu. For most of us, halavai, we keep track on the things that we do and say and think, and then we can worry about these Bekirbo thoughts. So these are some words with regards to the beginning of the Parsha. And I'd like to move from the beginning of Vayera, skipping out most of it, to the end, to the Akedah. Of course, there's so much to say about the Akedah. The main point of the Akedah is really lost on us, perhaps unavoidably, because we know that in the end it didn't happen. We are all living proof of that. And therefore, as much as we read the Akedah, it's impossible for us. We would literally need to take weeks or months and put ourselves back into a mindset where this really could happen. And then we begin to appreciate what it means for Avram to wait 100 years to have a child, and this is his only child, and be told the incomprehensible by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and be prepared to do it. But this is the schus of the Akedah, which stays with us for all generations. And the more one actually looks at the details, the more you just cannot get over Avram Avinu. I mean, we say every morning, Ashreinu matov chalkeinu, umanayim goreinu, mayofi rishaseinu, how great is our inheritance, just to appreciate our forebears, just a glimmer of what's happening with Avram. Not only does he agree to do the Akedah. The Pasuk states, we're in Perek Kaf Beis. Pasuk Gimel, Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. I mean, all of these words are just unbelievable. He woke up early the next morning in order to do this. Why? Because the mitzvah. For a mitzvah, you get up early. I would say the overwhelming forces of nature are having Avram sleep in for the second minyan on that day. He woke up early in the morning. And there's a halacha derived from here, the Gemara Pesachim and Dafta Aladam and Alad. Mikan shezrizim makdimim lemitzvahs. It's for Avram, there's operational policy with regards to mitzvahs that are learned from Avram as surely as if he was waking up to Sheikh Lulav and Esrog. Moreover, it states, Chavoshes Chavoro, he takes Shnina Arabito, Pasuk says, Vayivaka Atse Ola. He cut the wood. It seems to be a detail. He cut the wood. Okay, listen, you need wood. But the Sefer Akedas Yitzchak, aptly named for this section, but there would be Rabbi Yitzchak Aramah of the great Rishonim. The Akedas Yitzchak says, well, what's he cutting wood for? You're not going to find wood closer? Why is he cutting wood now? And Akedas Yitzchak says that Avram was concerned. Listen, there'll probably be wood there, but maybe there won't. Now, if there isn't wood there, there can be no Ola. Should that be the case, Avram has no options. Circumstances beyond his control make it impossible for him to fill the mitzvah, otherwise known as onus. Onus rachmana patre, the Torah exempts him. Circumstances didn't allow him to perform this mitzvah. Says Akedas Yitzchak, and it's true, for so many situations, to a certain degree, a person can be bound by circumstances, but there is a certain amount that a person decides how much they will be bound by circumstances. Because if you want something, or if you're determined enough, you will make circumstances. You will bring your own circumstances. As if to say, if Avram was half-heartedly Yotze Zayin going to the Akedah, I turned up! What can I do? There was no wood. He doesn't want to enter into that situation. So he brings the wood with him, just in case there isn't. So there shouldn't be a reason why he wouldn't have to do the Akedah. The Gevuras HaNefesh involved in all of these details. I mean, picture Avram chopping wood as he's just to make sure. There's a very interesting medrash where at a certain point, towards the end, Hashem, when Avram has passed the test, says the Bracious Rabbah, and Avram is now davening for his children, Hashem Yir'eh, and there should be a schus for the Jewish people. So the medrash says that Avram said, you know, when you asked me to kill Yitzchak, I could have raised an objection. I could have said it's a contradiction in the divine will, because you've already told me Kivi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara. You've already told me that Yitzchak will be the continuation of the Jewish people. How then can you tell me to kill him? That's a contradiction in the divine will. Says Avram, I could have asked that, but Ela Shekavashti Es Rachamai, but I suppressed my Rachmanus for Yitzchak, and I didn't ask. So you, if the Jewish people ever need Rachmanus, be sure to have it in abundance. That's Avram's tefillah. I should have had Rachmanus, and I withheld it for you, so you make it available for my descendants. That's his tefillah. But what's fascinating is, Avram seems to be connecting two things that aren't connected. As if to say, he states that when you told me to kill Yitzchak, it's a contradiction. contradictions in Hashem's words, that's in the area of theology or religion. But Avram said, I didn't ask that. But the way he phrased it is, Kavashti es rachamai. I suppressed my rachmanus. Suppressing rachmanus is in the area of emotions. These are two separate things. The first is working out what Hashem wants, and the second is how prepared are you to do it? They're two separate things. Even were there to be no contradiction, Avram has to suppress his rachamim. It's about when you know you have to do it, even though you don't want to, you have rachamim, says not to, you suppress that. How do these two link? How does suppressing his rachmanus lead him to not ask this question? The question's a good question. Does it become not a good question? They're two different currencies. One is theology and one's rachmanus. But the Kehilas Yitzchak explains that the Medrash here is conveying to us a very deep message. The extent to which a person can be plagued about certain questions of theology is very often a function as to how prepared they are to follow through if they're able to work out the answer. In other words, and you find it, lahavdil again, but in so many situations, sometimes a person doesn't do something, and you ask them why, and they give you an explanation. And they propound it into a good explanation, but this could have been worked out. If you really wanted to do it, this could have been worked out. As if to say, Avram has a question. Does he think there's an answer? There must be an answer. The same God that gave him the two conflicting statements must be capable of reconciling them. So the question is, to what degree would you wish to stay by the brick wall of the contradiction and not move further? That's Rachmanus. That's Rachmanus saying, I don't want to do this. Because I don't want to do it, therefore I'll allow the question to be insurmountable for me. But if you did want to do it, you know the answers are in good hands and the question wouldn't bother you anymore. It's very interesting to appreciate that what seem to be two separate worlds, the cerebral cognitive world of theology and the emotional world of Rachmanus, and do I want to do this or do I not want to do that, there's a lot of interplay between them. They're not as distinct as they would seem to be on paper. And so Avram says, if I had Rachmanus, that question would have been something I could never get past. I suppress Rachmanus and I put the question to the side, because I'm sure the answer is in good hands. Now, in the end of the Akedah, Avram receives a bracha in Pasuk Yud Zayin. As it begins in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Kiyana she'asisa sadavar hazeh, because you did this, velochasachtes binechas yeschidecha, you didn't withhold your son, kivarecha varechacha, I will bless you, v'harbar arber sarachach kechver shamayim, your descendants will be many, v'chachol asher asfas hayam, like the stars, like the sand, v'yirash zarecha es shar oivav, and your descendants will inherit the gate or the territory of their enemies. That's a very interesting bracha. Which enemies? He's doing the Akedah. He wants things to be well for his people. It's a rather specific, as if to say, everything so far, numerous descendants, it's very general. This is a very specific channeling. Your descendants shall dispossess the territory of their enemies. So an explanation of these words comes from a sefer called Be'er Mayim Chaim. It's one of the Hasidic Sfarim written by Rav Chaim Tirer of Chernovitz. And he's one of the Talmidim of the Mezrich HaMagid. And he casts this entire bracha now in a new light. Really, it begins in last week's parsha. Avram Avinu is given the mitzvah of Mila at the age of 99. And it is intimately bound up with the promise of getting Eretz Yisrael. You see that they come together the whole time. And indeed, that has halachic ramifications. Because the Gemara says in Brachas and Daf Memtes that it's imperative to mention Mila during benching in the Bracha about Eretz Yisrael. You've got to mention Torah and Mila, which we do. The Gemara says if a person did not mention Torah or Mila in the Bracha of No Delecha, he wasn't Yotze. He's got to go back. Ad Kedei Kach. So the two are very much bound up. But there's a very interesting subtext here. Because, for what it's worth, Yitzchak is not the only son of Avram who has the mitzvah of Mila. To a certain degree, so do Avram's other children, specifically Yishmael. Yishmael had Milah before Yitzchak. He had Milah at the time of that Avram did. A year later, Yitzchak was born. And we should know, I mean, these are sources that obviously are beyond us, but it is stated in the Zohar HaKadosh that Yishmael is not that easy to get rid of from Israel. Because if the mitzvah of Milah gives one a foothold in the land, says the Zohar, to a certain degree, because the descendants of Yishmael also observe Milah, which they do, they also have a certain holding, much to our displeasure. Now, it can expire after a certain time because they don't have the mitzvah to the same degree, but it's a force to be reckoned with. However, it's not just merely a question of waiting it out until the Jewish people do more Milah than them. And I wonder, I don't even know if this is correct religiously, whether it's worthwhile investing in a propaganda campaign to dissuade them from doing Milah. I don't know. But there's plenty of other propaganda campaigns before that one. But this brings us to the Akedah. You see, the Akedah is introduced with a very, actually, word missing context. Achar hadvarim ha'ela, after these words. What are these words? Rashi gives three perushim. And one of those perushim from the Bereishis Rabbah is that Yishmael was belittling Yitzchak. He says, I'm a bigger tzaddik than you are. Because when did you have Milah? You were 8 days old, and what are you going to do? You're going to protest? I was 13. I'm a para adam. I could have run away. I could have protested. But I didn't. And that makes my mitzvah greater than your mitzvah. Yitzhak responded to that and said, listen, you know, with all due respect, I'm older now, and I would be prepared to give my life, my whole life, if Hashem only said. That's the background to the Akedah. But what that means is that, just not to forget, says Be'er Mayim Chaim, these words are the Akedah's Yitzchak, which then immediately happened, is Yitzchak's response to the mitzvah of Milah of Yishmael. And thus we understand that Akedah's Yitzchak takes its place almost as the supplement or as the additional aspect that Yitzchak has for Milah over Yishmael. The Milah itself, Yitzchak is 8 days old, Yishmael is 13, but Yitzchak at the age of 37 will give his whole life. And that's the response. And because it's the response, it's also the spiritual response. And therefore, it gives the Akedah Yitzchak gives the Jewish people added holding within Eretz Yisrael. And that's why the bracha, it begins very generally, you have numerous descendants, but the bracha concludes, V'yirash zacha eshar oivav, meaning even if your enemies are in your land, which they will be, and they are, the Akedah will give you that added boost. You have the mitzvah Milah, so do they, but you have the Akedah, V'yirash zacha eshar oivav. And oivav, we should know, Rabbeinu Bachya states in a number of places, in the Vilna Gaon, also in the Aderes Eliyahu, that oyev versus sone, which are, for the Jewish people, are two words of your enemy and your foe. Oyev generally refers to Yishmael and that world. Sone refers to the world of Esav. Yishmael are the ones that need to be reckoned with in terms of being dispossessed, and the Akedah is a contribution to that. And at this point, we need to bring in, just to take these words from the life of Avram Avinu closer to our times. There is a comment, it has been a long time since I've come across a comment such as this, and it could only be said by the person who said it, for reasons that we will see. One of the great rabbinic figures, really of the Holocaust era and the Warsaw Ghetto specifically, was the Piasetzner Rav, of Klonimus Kamen of Piasetzner. He wrote many works. His drushes are known as Eish Kodesh, and these are drushes that he gave in the Warsaw Ghetto. He lost his family. They were killed at the very beginning of the war, like Sukkot of 1939. Which by Sukkot of 1940, we already have a drusha from him on the first yortzeit of his son, who was called Rav Elimelech, and they were all killed. Shem Yikom Damo. And he raises a question on that occasion. Again, you see clearly how no one else can say this. Only he can say this. Only someone who's there can say this. And he asked the question that it seems like the Jewish people are going through this inferno, they're going through the shmad, but it's not a shmad like you ever had before. He's asking this question because terrible times had befallen the Jewish people, but this is not just in scope greater. It doesn't seem to have the same method as the other shmad, because a normal shmad is you're given the choice, convert or die. And the shmad is, the Kiddush Hashem, is to choose not to convert. But if you would, so it's a terrible decision, but then they let you go, then they welcome you in. Says the Piyosetz Narav, that's not happening anymore. No one asks. Before they kill us, no one's asking, do you want to convert? They're not asking, and if we offer, they're not accepting. Even those that tried, it didn't make a difference. So this isn't a shmad along the normal lines, to the extent that one can say normal about any of this. It doesn't seem to be a shmad. How do we understand this? Says the Piyosetz Narav, and it's such a statement. I see these years, and he did not live to see that to the end of those years. I see these years as the second part of Akedas Yitzchak. In other words, this enormous merit that we have from so long ago, it is entirely in the realms of preparedness on the part of Avram Yitzchak. Avram was prepared to kill Yitzchak, which was the ultimate, but in the end he didn't do it. So you have his readiness with no action. Says the Piyosetz Narav, in our times we have the opposite. We have only action. We have only action of killing Jews. There is no readiness. It's not of the essence. It doesn't make a difference one way or the other. Because this is now the second half of the Akedah. And those are his words. And of course we have to at that point go past those years. Because 3 years after that inferno was finished, the Jewish people are miraculously entrenching themselves in the land of Israel. And of course, in general terms, we refer to it as a miracle. But more specifically, if we understand from the Be'er Mayim Chaim that the Akedah gives the added merit of the Yiras Zarecha Esh HaOyvav, and you saw in 3 years, which in broader historical terms is the twinkling of an eye, that the Jewish people were thinking, with zero resources, were able to reestablish themselves and dispossess significantly Sha'ar Oivav, it's because the Akedah had been supplemented recently, and that's what the Jewish people brought home. So these words are, there are so many things. They're fascinating, they're shattering, they're inspiring, and I believe they give us an insight into the time in which we live, and they should really give us inspiration to really make the most of this amazing opportunity that we have to live here in Eretz Yisrael, and Mirtz Hashem, through making the most of it, we should bring ourselves closer through life to the culmination of these events, the Geula Shleima B'Mehreh Bi'Yameinu.